Welcome back to part two, the Blue Power Hour. Mr. John Townsend, I wrote the book. I wrote the book. Damn. There's something about your music, John, that is unique. And we talked about that a couple of weeks ago, that sets you apart from so many writers out there. I mean, I know you recorded these. You did most of the playing on them, right?
No, on this particular song, this was a band that I had put together. A lot of friends. Jimmy Varley was the drummer from the Sanford Townsend band. Hutch Hutchinson from Bonnie Raitt's band was the bass player. Hurricane Jake on harmonica. Renee Gare was the female voice you heard. A big, beautiful white girl from Australia.
And did she overdub the parts?
She overdubbed the parts.
So. Sounds like three or four girls.
Telling you, yeah, she's great. She's wonderful.
And these are new tunes, right? Basically, except "Smoke from a Distant Fire."
Yeah, everything is recent.
So, what are you doing now? You're looking for another deal?
Well, I have a really close friend that I've had for about 25 years named Alex Cazanegras.
Yeah.
He is one of the finest recording engineers in the business.
Absolutely.
Has been for years. He's done everyone from Loggins & Messina to Weather Report. You name it. He's got his resume, you don't believe it. You say, he's lying about all this, and he's not, you know. But Alex has... He has a wonderful studio set up in his home, and he called me one day. He's been doing commercials, losing his mind, doing commercials for the last 12 years or so, making good dough. But he called me up one day, said, "Listen, bro, I've been thinking about it, you know," and because we had recently made contact again, and he said, "I want you to come over." He says, "We're going to start recording until somebody gives us some money to do it." And we started out with the new version of "Smoke from Distant Fire" that you heard. We're working on a couple of other things right now, and but it's just a joy to do that with no
time constraints.
No time constraints, and no one's no one hanging over us saying you got to do this project now and finish it because we got to release it by this such and such a time, And we're doing it on our own time and with our own imagination and stuff. So.
Well, that's a good thing. That's a real good thing. We were talking earlier about you being on the road and some of the stories from you being on the road and your feeling standing up on stage and looking and saying, "Damn, I'm playing with these people."
Oh, yeah. Well, I had the good fortune a couple of years ago, actually a little more than a couple of years ago, to play with the Greg Allman Band.
Yeah.
And Greg's someone I've known for, at least 20, 25 years, and we were always sympathetic to each other's music and were into what each other was doing. And I was at a low point, sort of, at one point in... when I hadn't been doing anything. It was a period of my life where I hated music.
Yeah.
Not the music itself, but just the business end of it. And Greg was with his band. He was playing with the Toller Brothers, Danny and Frankie Toller, and some other really good players at the time. And I went to a little club out. They were playing at a place called the Country Club out in the Valley.
Yeah.
And went to see him one night, and Greg said, "Hey, man, goddamn, it's great to see you. You got to come up to San Francisco. I'm living up there now, and you can do some writing and stuff." So I was up there for an afternoon, and we sat down and started writing. So, and Greg said, "Oh, by the way, you're in the band." And I went, "Oh, thank you. And for that, I love the guy. I mean, I've always loved and admired his stuff, but he sort of lifted me up by my bootstraps at one point and said, "You know, listen, you got to be out there playing, you got to do it." And I owe him a lot for that inspiration, you know, and he's gotten me back into the self-confidence. I mean, at nights that we were on stage doing all those great Allman Brothers songs, you know, Midnight Rider and those things. And
Whipping Post.
And then looking across the stage, because that's the first band I'd ever played in where I was a sideman.
Yeah.
The first band. I was always the guy out front, the guy singing the songs, the guy writing the songs, and I had nights where I would just sit over there in my little corner of the stage opposite Greg and look across the stage and see all these guys and go, "Hey, I'm up here playing with these guys." God damn.
What a great feeling.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You told me a funny story about Greg Allman about... he has a heart problem or something, and you guys were writing a song or working on a song or something.
He had a couple of times where he almost checked out, and the big checkout. And there's a song that came out of one of those experiences where he woke up in the hospital with a couple of cracked ribs from Danny Toller beating on his chest, trying to bring him back to life, and it worked.
Yeah.
And he came out with this this idea that eventually became a song called "When the Lights Go Out on You," and I can't hear the song without getting chill and goosebumps over it, because it's somebody that's been to the edge and come back again, you know.
You might say it's divine inspiration.
Tell the story, yeah.
Well, I tell you what. Being part of the business and just being able to be in the business, and I was on the road for a long, long time playing, and got tired of the suitcases. But there's a part of me that just dearly loves being on the road and just playing the music for people. And it doesn't make any difference whether it's for 10 people or 10,000. I know you saw a lot of that with the Sanford Townsend Band.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Where is Mr. Sanford now?
Sanford, Ed is my good buddy. I talked to him a couple of days ago, and we still communicate, and we're still still friends. We just don't work together a lot. We have other interests. Ed, for example, is a fabulous artist. He has his own business, artwork. I mean, he does everything from murals on walls and for mansions in Bel Air to industrial type of settings with his artwork and stuff.
What made him stop music business?
Well, he actually hasn't stopped. Ed has written over the years. He's written some incredible songs. He wrote a song called "I Keep Forgetting" with Michael McDonald.
Oh yeah, "You Don't Love Me No More." Is that?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, good song.
And he still writes. He still has a little recording set up in his home, and he writes with a number of people that And things are getting out there. I think he had one cut on one of David Crosby's records, but I admire. I mean, that's what drew us together was we're mutual talents of that we respected.
Yeah.
And that hasn't gone away.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, it's hard to find. I was with a friend of mine this morning who she's a lady that I've known a long time. She has one of the classic Hollywood stories, where she was actually signed to ABC and had a party and a signing party and had everybody and their brother come over that weekend. And on the Monday morning, the president of ABC was fired, and a new president came in and tore up her contract and said to anyone, the other guy signed it, I don't want it, and that was it.
Oh, that's amazing. There's a lot of great music that's been recorded that's on a shelf somewhere that's never going to be released because of just the situation. For example, when Sanford and I, we were first formed our band, and we had a publishing deal that our songs were being shopped all over town, and several record companies took an interest to us, and... Joe Smith was at Warner Brothers at that time, and he was courting us heavily, and we really liked the guy. Such a class act, this guy, all the way around. And the week that we signed, finally wound up signing our names to the contract, he left the company.
He left the
to
company.
To go to Elektra or somewhere like that.
Yeah.
And had it not been for Jerry Wexler, we would have been buried too. Jerry Wexler and Barry Beckett produced our first record, and Jerry's not somebody you just take his project away from and put it on a shelf.
Absolutely not, if he believes in it.
No, he
is one of the greatest men in the music business, American music.
Yeah.
And my hat's off to him. I mean, I loved everything that he produced in the 50s, and that's of course what I grew up with, and you too.
When we realized that we had an opportunity to work with him, there was no other choice.
I used to talk to him every morning. I used to work for a guy named Joe Galkin out of Atlanta, and Joe was had the Atlantic Records, you know, that was one of his clients to promote, and he had the South. I don't know how many states, but Joe would work all day, and he'd drink all day. And he'd like work until midnight, figuring out things to do for the next day. But he'd also drink about a fifth of scotch. And I would go in and open up. His office was in his apartment, and I'd go in the morning and answer the phones. And I used to talk to Jerry Wexler almost every morning. You know, Joe up yet? Nah, not yet. And Joe would get up. Who called? You know, Jerry Wexler called. Oh yeah, what did he want? He wanted to know if you got
him again.
Yeah, he wanted to know if you got the new Wilson Pickett played, you know. And that was those were good times. And Jerry's now retired and living in Sarasota.
That's right.
And I wish him nothing but the best.
And me too as well.
And talk, we were talking also talking about going back to the basics. And this week on our front page, we have the Blues Heroine of the Week. I decided, as far as putting men up all the time, I figured, what the heck? Women had a great deal to do with the blues as well.
Equal opportunity under the blues.
Yeah, so. Well, I had several emails saying, how come you don't have any women up there? And, Jeannie would be the first one to say, yeah, why not? We all know Jeannie. And so the Blues Heroine of this week is Ida Cox.
Oh.
And she was born Ida Prather. And it's a funny thing because it says here, birthplace Knoxville, Tennessee. And then it says on the next page, born in 1896 in Toccoa, Georgia.
Whoa.
So it's probably, they don't know where she was born. And in those days, I don't think they kept a very good record of where black kids were born.
Mostly at home.
Mostly at home, yeah. Absolutely. And it says, Ida Cox may have been the complete classic blues artist of the 1920s. Ida had a convincing blues delivery that made her one of the more popular female singers of the era, like Bessie Smith and Ma Rainey. Cox symbolized the liberated spirit of some black American blues women in the 20s with her stylish outlook, lavish wardrobe, and business savvy. Cox wrote many of her own songs, often produced her own stage shows, and managed her own touring company called Raisin Cane. So let's listen to a little bit of Ida Cox. What do you say?
Please.
Hopefully, I've got it up. Yeah. Go ahead, yeah.
Won't you answer me, please?
Oh, my God. That was a quick ending. That's absolutely great. A quick ending.
Oh, I think that's just amazing that those things still exist.
Well,
they were recorded.
Yeah, those were recorded individually, one at a time. The whole band got in a room, and they had this cutter, which was attached to a horn. And they all stood up, and if it was a solo, the soloist would come forward, and the singer would back out of the way. I mean, you can tell it sounds like tearing tin. I think it's probably, there is no fidelity range in there between, I think it's probably around 1,000 and 3,000, and that's it. You know, there's no high end, there's no low end, but we have it. And that's an amazing thing. That really, Ida Cox.
From 80 years ago.
Yeah. 80 years ago, she's our blues heroine of the week here on BluePower.com. The next thing that I'd like to play for you is a friend of mine from New York City. I've been in touch with this gentleman. He's got a band called the Robert Ross Band. And he sent me a tape. And it's very good. He's very, very good. We came across each other quite by accident. And I'm glad we did. You know, God doesn't make any mistakes. And very, very pleased to play this on the Robert Ross Band. It's the old Elmore James tune, "It Hurts Me Too." Like blue. When things go wrong with me and you, it hurts me too. The Robert Ross Band featuring Mr. Robert Ross on slide guitar. He's not bad, huh?
No, he's good.
No, I'm very, very, very pleased to play that. And it's a funny thing because Robert has played with Lightnin' Hopkins, John Lee Hooker, Big Joe Turner, Big Mama Thornton. Otis Rush, Dr. John, Memphis Slim, J.B. Hutto, Homesick James, and the list goes on. He's even played with Freddie King. But he sent me a piece, which I just had to put up on the front page, a true story about Lightnin' Hopkins. Oh, it's not on? I got my man shut off
okay.
Over here. And, it says here, Albert King said of him, he's so fast, Lightning would have to get on roller skates to catch him.
I like that.
But he wrote this piece, a true story about Lightning Hopkins, called The Chicken Inspector, which is quite funny, and if you got a second, check it out on the front page. Once again, we're sitting here with Mr. John Townsend, and we're also sitting here with his lovely wife, Jennifer, and our special friend from the Musicians Institute, Andreas. What's your last name, Andreas?
Larson.
And you're from Sweden, right?
Yep.
Yeah. What brings you to the Musicians Institute?
I'm in the RIT program.
Ah, the Recording Institute part. You're going to be an engineer?
I hope so.
Excellent. Excellent. Are you learning something here?
You bet.
Oh, yeah. This is a great place. The energy level at the Musicians Institute is unbelievable. I mean, it's what amazes me is I can walk through the halls going to the bathroom. I hear 20 different languages, you know, 10 or 15 types of music being played all at one time. I mean, it really is. We're here in the Max Factor building in Hollywood. It used to be Max Factor's where all the makeup was done for the movies during the 30s and the 40s and the 50s. And so this building has a history to begin with.
I just came back from the porcelain facility down the hall, and I walked by and looked through a window and saw about four or five kids or young people of different nationalities playing a Stevie Wonder tune.
Absolutely.
And playing it good.
Yeah.
You know.
They've got great teachers here, and all you got to do to get to the Musicians Institute is click on the link on Blue Power's front page or any of the pages, because it's always there, no matter where you go. We're very, very proud to be here, and I wish to thank, our wonderful engineer, Jeanette Mishler, for taking the time and putting up with my crap. I'll tell you that, because I'm basically all thumbs by myself. Without Jeannie, I'm lost. I miss you, Jeannie. I'll see you next week. She will be here. John, you're going to play something live for us now, right?
Yeah, there's a little story that goes with this song, and it's... I'll try to do the Reader's Digest version.
All righty.
I was end of a tour. I was in the Savannah airport one afternoon late, about this time of year, and there had been ice storms in Atlanta, which chokes out all the airlines around within 800 miles.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And you know the feeling. And I found myself standing at in the line to find out what the hell's going on and to get your boarding pass and find out the flight was going to be delayed and at least 3.5 hours, and I found myself standing in line behind this impeccably dressed little African-American man wearing a hat and a nice coat thrown over his shoulder, and I say impeccably dressed with one exception. He had one of those little paper rings that
you get
in the public restrooms hanging out of the back of his coat. Evidently he got up, it stuck, and whatever.
Yeah.
So I'm looking around. I go, guy, you know,
I tapped him on the shoulder, and I leaned over, and I said, excuse me, young fella, I don't want to embarrass you, but there's something hanging out of the back of your coat. You might want to check it out. And as he reached down with his free hand and felt behind him, and as he looked around to me, he had this most amazing shade, his face was the most amazing shade of purple, and I realized at that second that it's Muddy Waters.
Oh, my God.
I went, and I almost freaked, because he's Muddy's, you know, the guy.
The man.
I'm here, yeah. You know, hoochie coochie, man, and I just, anyway, he went back to the bathroom and took care of the situation and came back over to me and said, I want to thank you for being such a fine young gentleman. I've been walking around for about a half an hour with that thing hanging out of my pants, and nobody said nothing. And he was on the same flight that was connecting. Well, I was on my way to Nashville to write with this friend of mine, and he was on his way to Chicago, as I remember, to perform somewhere. And we talked. We shared a pizza, a couple of beers, you know, and while we sat and talked and told stories, and he would, I'd start to interrupt him or something. He'd go, oh, no, don't hold me back now. Let me finish here. Don't hold me back. And he must have said it 20, 30 times. But we got to Nashville, and I shared this story, this little interlude with my friend. And there's a song called Dark Clouds. It's not a blues song, but it's dedicated to Muddy Waters.
Excellent. We're going to hear that now.
Let's get
here we go.
Crying tears like holy water, there's a storm inside of me, raging like a river trying to break free. But don't hold me back, when I'm trying to explain, this it's a dark cloud, it always holds the rain. One night in Savannah, many years ago, I met an old black man down an old black road. Well, he pointed to the sunset and he said, brother, that's where we belong, 'cause it's just the light inside us all that leads us to our home. Started telling stories about great dreams gone by, about the shotgun chaperones, and about the freedom ride. Well, the shirt was all a tangle, but his voice was scratchy true. His eyes are full of mystery. Muddy water blue. Crying tears like holy water. When I'm trying to explain that it's a dark cloud with all the blessed rain. Well, the years went
went by so quickly. No, I could not slow them down. But every now and then, you know, the old man's words come back around. When he said, it's just a light inside us all, and it won't ever fade. No, no, 'cause we're all colors of one love. Some sunshine and some shade. Crying tears like holy water. There's a storm inside of me. Raging like a river trying to break free. But don't hold me back, boy, when I'm trying to explain. It's a dark cloud that always holds the rain. Yes, it's a dark cloud that always holds the rain. The dark cloud.
John, it's beautiful. That really is a nice song.
Oh, thank you, man.
And I tell you what, today I have two sisters. It's their birthday today. I'd like to dedicate that song to them, to my sister B, and to my sister Marianne. I think they'll love that song. Happy birthday, girls.
Happy birthday.
Excellent, excellent. And now we got another John Townsend song. What's the title of this one?
This one is...
Die Trying.
Die
right?
Trying.
Right?
That's
yeah.
The way. Yeah.
Yeah, is that ready to go, Jeanette? Yeah. Let's rock it.
I was thinking how you left your heart prints all over me. And how my soul is black and blue from holding back the crying. But I'll hold on to you or die trying. Arrows of love are not always carefully aimed. But I I'll hold
Everybody, that's it for this evening of Blue Power Hour. I want to thank Mr. John Townsend for being here. He's been a wonderful guest. Thank you so much, John. It's always a pleasure having writers of your stature here to give our audience some information on how they can deal with a life in show business, if you know where I'm coming from. I want to thank Ms. Jeanette Mishler for putting up with my cock and bull. And thank Mr. Michael Toth and Mr. David Kimmelman and all the people on the staff of the Blue Power Hour who helped make this thing fly. And thanks to all the people that listen and write email. It's getting so heavy that I can't get back to all of it, so you'll have to wait a few days. And God bless you. I'll get back to you soon. Once again, happy birthday, Marianne and Bea, my two lovely sisters. I love y'all and hope to see you very, very soon. God bless you, and we'll talk to you later.